Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's FM 103.2, available on the web at fm1032.com.au.
Well, he's a household name, internationally recognised as part of the creme de la creme of the jazz world. He's played for royalty and world leaders, he's toured with Ray Charles, he opened the Sydney Olympic Games. Dizzy Gillespie has called him the best of the best. Ray Brown describes him as a genius, and around about now, James Morrison, you should be blushing.
I was going to say, I'd like to meet him. Sounds fantastic.
Welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Pretty big week for you, I believe. All sorts of early mornings.
Had a big day. I say, yes, actually, it's been a big week. And you go, actually, this month has been a really big month. And I think about the year and I go, actually, it's been, and so on and so on. I'm having a pretty big life.
Yes. Well, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You formed your first band at 9. You were playing in the clubs by 13. Is that legal?
We're not sure, but it doesn't matter now, does it?
That's the history.
No, I think what we had at the time was some sort of dispensation. As long as I stayed on the stage, quite seriously, through the whole night and didn't go into the club proper, then I was okay because there's no licensed premises on stage.
Is that right?
And so when the band took a break, because they were all much older, well, they'd take a break and go into the club, I'd just stay on the stage, you know?
Legally
play a bit of solo piano.
That's funny. Well, it's been quite a life. And of course, we're talking the past. You've still got a few years ahead of you, I'm sure.
I think I've got a little longer to go yet. And, you know, I reckon I could only be a third of the way through, surely.
Yeah, exactly. 27, of course you are. Playing with Ray Charles, that must have been a highlight for you.
Oh, it's great. It was wonderful. We spent a few months, maybe 3 months, going right around the world. It's interesting because when you hear Ray Charles, it's wonderful. And then when you first hear him live, it's great. And when you're first on stage with him in the band, fantastic. But nonetheless, I still expected, well, we're going to do this every night. So no matter how great it is, you know, after 10 nights, 20 nights, 30, you know, or something, it'll wear off. And you'll be just like, okay, now we're doing the gig. And, you know, at the end of 3 months, having heard it every night, he'd start to sing. It would be exactly the same as the first night, the same feeling. You go, oh, listen to that.
Yeah. But there's been others too. B.B. King and the Dizzy Gillespies of the world and George Benson. Anyone that you could say has been your favourite apart from, say, Ray Charles?
Oh, no. Even Ray, I can't say favourite because then what do I say about Dizzy? What do I say about... No, so, you know, they're all different. And... they're all... Ray Charles is my favourite Ray Charles.
Nicely put.
Yeah. No, they're just wonderful. I've been really lucky to work with, you know, most of my record collection, is how I think of it, which is just fantastic.
Yeah. I often wondered what it must have been like for you doing the opening fanfare there for the Sydney Olympic Games. Do you ever get nervous, and was that a moment where you did?
No. No, no. I get excited. Like, I'm thinking, wow, this is a big gig. I mean... opening of the games, hometown, 100,000 people standing in front of you. I don't know how many, you know, take your pick as to how many watching on TV. They, you know, half a billion people or something. And so, yeah, it doesn't get much bigger than that. But at the same time, all I had to do was blow the trumpet, which is what I do. And so it's an interesting thing, nerves, because I know some wonderful musicians who get nervous, not because they're starting out. People who've been in the business for years still get nervous. It's just part of how they are as a performer. It's not something that I've ever had to deal with. And I know this is, in one way, a silly thing to say, but in another, it's a very real thing to say. If you could pick up the trumpet at home in your bedroom and play that opening fanfare and play it correctly and not miss notes or whatever, well, it's the same trumpet, same lips in front of all the people.
But it's not the same context.
I know. And what people would say is, yes, but the consequences of missing something in your bedroom are small. And the consequences of missing it, you know, on live television around the world, the opening games, you never live it down. But I don't want to sound egotistical. I don't want to sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet.
Boom, boom.
Boom, boom. Thank you. You do the boom, booms.
I will.
But for those consequences to be considered, there has to be a possibility that you'll miss the note. For me, playing is a joyful thing, and I sense the gift of music. And so I don't think, oh, what if this goes wrong? It won't. Not because I'm some sort of hero, because of what I'm doing. I'm using my gift, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and I know I can. Mm-hmm. And so the consequences of playing in front of the people at the Olympics or in the bedroom are exactly the same.
I bet you there's a lot of people that would wish that they could say those very same things you've just said, James, with just the same degree of confidence.
Yeah, well, I guess, look, I think confidence is an interesting thing. If your confidence is based on, no, I know I'm really good, I've done a lot of practice, I, if it keeps starting with I, then it's all up to you. I'm starting to feel nervous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If your confidence is based on a belief that this is what you're supposed to be doing, and this is, you know, part of what you're here for, there's this great sense of relief of like, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. I wouldn't be led to do something like this if I wasn't supposed to be doing it. Then the confidence you have is based on something bigger than you. All of a sudden, it's much more solid.
Hmm. Nicely put. James Morrison is with us on Open House tonight. When was that moment when you realised this is what I'm called to do? Was there an epiphany one day? Ah, this is it.
I think there was an epiphany. I was going to say there were epiphanies because they're, or epiphani, is it? but there was never a moment where I realised this is what I'm supposed to do. There was a moment where I realised I could do it. There was a moment where I decided I wanted to. When I was very young and I first heard some jazz, I went, oh, I want to play that. I want to do that. So there was a decision. But it was more over many years you realise, rather than having a moment, you sort of go, gee, I'm probably supposed to be doing this because it's kind of working out really well. And then, of course, more and more, once that idea's in your head, more and more evidence, you know, comes to support that issue. Yeah. And then over years, more of a gentle but deeper realisation, I know why I wanted to and I know why I could because I'm supposed to.
What was the first song you mastered?
You're assuming that I've mastered one.
I am.
Had to say that. Look, the first song that I learned to play that I recall, apart from your little sort of, you know,
chopsticks.
Hang on, quick sample.
Yeah, please.
Apart from this was one of the early ones. That's one of the early ones you learn on the trumpet. I could teach you that.
Yeah, thank you. It's a classic, isn't
there's more to it. But no, real please. Song that I remember that I played over many years, the first one I learned was the Basin Street Blues, which is... And the band answers, you could sing that part.
That was absolutely beautiful.
But, yeah, that was the first one because it was the first jazz piece I heard. And I said, oh, I want to play jazz. So I learned that song first, of course.
Yeah. I'm so glad I asked you to do that. I'm so glad I asked that question. What was that first piece? It's amazing. Music has such an ability to move, change moods, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it can go even deeper and even affect the spirit, touch the spirit in some way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only can it does. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. As beautiful, and I don't want to take anything away from them, I'm an avid reader, and I love words and I love reading, and well-written things can really move you and really touch you very deeply. But there's one difference there with that and music, and that is that there's an intellect thing that must take place when I read words. I have to do the reading. But secondly, I have to understand the words and understand the sentence. And then the comprehension of it is when this wonderful dawning of the meaning or the movement within you happens. Music bypasses that whole first process. If I play music to you, you don't need to understand it. You don't even need to know what I'm playing. You certainly don't need to know the notes, whereas you do need to know the letters in the words. You don't have to understand the form of the song, like a sentence. You can just sit there and let the music happen to you. And what it does is it speaks to you emotionally, directly, without involving your intellect. You can choose to involve it and start analysing the song or thinking of things about the song, or gee, that's a fast song, that's an intellectual judgment. But emotionally, music can go to you directly. If I've got a feeling and I want to communicate it to you, and now I'm giving you the definition of what I think a musician is, it's someone who can take that feeling and put it into musical sounds. That's what a musician's not someone who can play the trumpet. Musician, someone that's just playing the trumpet. That's not a musician. That's a trumpeter. A musician is someone who can take a feeling, something I want to convey, and turn it into musical sounds. There's every chance that you're going to get the feeling from those musical sounds that was the reason I played it. And so, of course, then not only can it move your emotions and create moods, because that's more of a surface thing, but actually go straight to a spiritual thing. If I'm feeling something, and that's one of the things about music. people have often, you know, over the years talked about what's good and bad music. And, you know, of course, mostly when people have that conversation, they're talking about taste. What they're really saying is what I like. When someone says, oh, that you know, rock and roll's awful music, if some, you know, older person says that, what they mean is, I don't like it. Here's the thing I think that makes it good, in inverted commas, music or not, is why it's being played, not what genre it is. What feeling did I have? If I hate someone and I write a song about that, or even without words, just play with that feeling, it's not good music. No matter how well it's played. But if I have a feeling that I want to convey to you that we would call, you know, generally would accept as a good feeling, as something positive, as something to offer, not beat you over the head with, then provided I can convey that, it's good music. But, there's a long answer to the question I don't even remember now. But no, you said, can it move us spiritually? Absolutely. Certainly can. And that's why.
And that leads us to the gospel collections that you've released, now two albums. If music can touch us spiritually, could the gospel genre, and certainly the meaning and the form and the very essence of the lyrics, even go a step deeper as well?
Yeah, what it does is, whether it's deeper, I would say it focuses the message more. I mean, if I play with a general wonderful joy of being alive and of the gift of life and of, you know, my place spiritually in the universe, and I play the Basin Street Blues, it'll be a wonderful feeling, and you'll get that feeling and you'll feel that joy. But if I specifically, that's why I think of focus the message more than just that general joy of being alive and my gratitude for the gift we've got. And I say, no, specifically, I want to talk about this aspect of the church that celebrates that. And I pick a hymn, and it doesn't matter whether I turn it into a jazz number or not. If I pick a hymn, that you know that hymn and you know what it means. Now I focus the message, that's more. And as such, perhaps rather than saying deeper, it becomes more potent. Like anything does that's more focused.
Mm. Well, that trumpet is, you know, gathering dust at the moment while we're sitting there.
Yes, it's been down there for, what, nearly 2.5 minutes
that's
now.
That's right. What about a track off the latest gospel collections too? Can you do something like Oh Happy Day for us?
Oh, I can play a little bit of Oh Happy
That'd
Day.
That'd be wonderful.
Yes. Choir to come in right there.
Fantastic. Beautiful. Hold on for a minute, because we've got to go to an ad break, but we've got to talk after this, okay?
Okay.
This is Open House. James Morrison is our guest. Well, let's talk about some of the deeper aspects of your life then, or maybe we could say the more focused aspects of your life. Son of a Methodist preacher.
Yes.
You were a PK, what they might call a preacher's kid. What was that like?
PK, I haven't heard that. No. What was that like? Well, it was interesting from the fact that everything, of course, revolved around the church, unlike perhaps some of my friends who, well, firstly might not have gone to church at all, but even the ones that did, church was on Sunday, and then it was over. Mm. But not for us, of course, it was all the time, because Dad being the minister, there'd be various things going on at home, and people coming over, and he'd ministering to people, and sometimes go along with him, and Bible study class, of course, would be in our lounge room, and so on, and so would choir practice, and so would everything else, and living in the parsonage, sort of right behind the church in a country town, meant that most of our time was spent there. And this was, to a young boy, both a blessing and a curse. Of course, the blessing was that it meant that church life was part of life. It wasn't this thing that just happened one day, and there's all sorts of good sides to that. Not the least of which, remember, to a young lad that's not thinking of the spiritual implications, just thinking of, you know, everyday practicalities, is on Sunday, my dad was the preacher. And so, of course, when you're hanging out with the other kids, I sort of, you know, it's like going to work with your dad. You know, it's kind of special. I mean, I did it every week. the curse side to a young lad like that was, exactly the same. Everything revolves around the church. So if you want to do something else, your friends say, we're doing this on Sunday, I mean, just forget it. Yeah. It's not even worth asking. Yes. You can't not turn up to church when your dad's the minister.
And did you ever feel a pressure that you were the minister's kid and you had to really live up to it?
You'd be looked at like that. And if a teacher wanted to sort of bring you into line in class, they could also mention, I didn't expect that from you. And I don't think your father would be very happy to hear about this, you know, and all that sort of thing. So that was the drag part. He said, oh, why can't my dad be, you know, like working down at the railroad or something? And then they would expect it of me, whatever it was I'd just done.
For some people, when they grow up in that environment, the message of Christianity, the message of Jesus, to some degree, well, it's there because they're around it so much, but then it's almost as if when I get to a particular age, I need to get out there and break free from this. I need to live my own life. Did you have a rebellion time?
I needed to get away because, as you've already said, from the age of 13, I was playing in nightclubs. So, I mean, when I turned up to church...
Which must have been a scandal in the church.
Absolutely. Well, I was looked as an evangelist. but, I mean, by the time I got to church Sunday morning at that age, I just spent Friday and Saturday night playing in nightclubs. So it was nothing to break out from. I was out there. No, it was a different feeling. And what it was, it had always been there and always been such a part of life, it wasn't special. It wasn't like someone who just goes to church Sunday morning or perhaps doesn't go at all and then one day has this epiphany or suddenly realises the whole thing. It was just a given. And so in a way, it was familiarity, you know, making it less special. That in one way made it, I was nothing to run away from, but in another way made it less exciting.
So was there a personal moment of commitment for you to the person of Jesus?
Yes. But it was, again, maybe because of the situation of being the preacher's kid, it wasn't just once. You'd have this realization, this commitment, and it wasn't that you fell by the wayside. You were still there then, but then it would come again. You'd realize it all over again, but stronger, in a new light. And so it happened a few times. And in fact, when I was 19, I was well and truly a jazz musician. I'd been touring with Don Burrows for 3 years in his band, and so it wasn't just like playing down at a local club. I was, you know, really a jazz musician. In that setting then, imagine what it was like when I said, okay, I know what I want to be, I'm going to be a preacher. That was at 19.
That's a bit surprising.
Yeah, it was like, even people who would be delighted, like mum and dad said, now are you sure that's a good idea? Because they could see that, you know, my ministry was in music, you know. And I did a lay preacher's course and I started preaching Sunday night.
What was your first message on? Do you remember?
My first message. I was one of those people that would direct the message to particular, not individuals, but particular segments of the church. So I, of course, took the opportunity to preach to my peers, to other teenagers in the church. My first message was to all the teenagers, and along the lines of that, we all thought we knew everything, because of course anyone who's 17, 18, or whatever does know everything, and that perhaps we didn't.
Right.
And perhaps there were still some that knew more than us, particularly if we were bothered to look in the Bible. And so, yeah, that was the first message. But then I think it was a gradual realization then rather than a moment, a gradual realization that, no, this is not, I can actually do a whole lot more with the trumpet in my hands. I have to say, without blowing my own trumpet, that's your ba-boom-tsh, thank you, that I thought I was pretty good in the pulpit.
Yes.
But
problem is nobody else did.
A little bit of the gift of the gab. But no, that I could do so much more.
Right.
There's a reason why people become affected so much when I play, and so much, you know, not nearly as much.
Yeah, there really is a difference between somebody who has kind of learnt to plonk out some notes on the piano and somebody who really is gifted, isn't there?
Yes, if the way you were putting that, learnt to plonk out some notes on the piano, the very fact that you've learnt it and you're plonking them out is quite descriptive, as in it's for the person playing, mostly. Do you know what I mean? You plonk out a tune on the piano because you enjoy it. A common instrument for that is guitar, because it's quite portable and you can take it to a party or take it on camping with friends or whatever, and you can pull out the guitar and play. And of course, I'm not talking about great guitarists here. I'm talking about people who can play a few chords so you can sing along. What's that for? You know, it's for the person who's playing it and perhaps their friends around them involved. That's what it's for. It's not for the world. When you are given a gift of much more musicality than that, it's not for you. I don't actually need to hear the trumpet. I'm not saying I don't like it, but I can hear the trumpet in my mind without picking up a trumpet quite easily. In fact, I have to be able to play it. That's how you play. And so for me to get my trumpet enjoyment, I need never pick one up again. Playing trumpet, in my case, is for everybody else, so they can hear it too. I don't create the music. I wouldn't be so presumptuous. I'm the person whom the music comes through, so everyone else can hear it.
How would you describe your faith these days?
Well, there's an interesting question. How does one describe something like
your relationship with God? Would you say, would you describe it in relational terms, a father and a son, or a friend to a friend? Would you, how would you describe it? You can take some time over this one if you like.
Okay.
You can play a little mood music in the
background. Rather than quickly how I've answered all the other questions. Look, it's interesting. I'd have to begin answering that question by saying I don't describe it in my own mind. It's not something for description. And one of the reasons for that, and I wouldn't liken it then to other relationships, and one of the reasons for that is that all of those things for me start to place limits in my mind on it. As soon as I can describe it, I'm boxing it in, because that's how we describe something. I look around at the creation and I say, well, there isn't any part of this that isn't part of God. Because if there is, if I can go somewhere, if I can go to a dreadful slum somewhere or where there's a war or wherever and say, well, God's not here, or that God didn't make this bit, well, then who did? It doesn't make it, for me, that's not part of my belief. The creation, which is everything, is made by God. Now, that doesn't mean God wants the war to be happening. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying it's all part of the creation. And in the same sort of way, my relationship has to be as all-encompassing as that. The bad days, the good days, the thoughts, the frustrations, you know, as well as the joys and the ecstasies. As soon as I, and I'm like anyone else, I want to define things, I want to understand them. But I have a suspicion, a little bit of a theory of mine, that the really important things, not shouldn't be, I don't think there's any shouldn't about it, but can't be intellectualized or understood. A scientist can tell us now stuff about the quantum physics and quantum dynamics level and stuff I've been reading about lately. I'm interested in all that non-linear dynamics and all this. They can describe things you wouldn't believe. And yet, say, okay, so let's just have a quick talk about love now. What have we got? What measurements have we got? Forget it. There's no proof it even exists. And there never will be. Because as soon as you can prove it, you can define it, and you can limit it, and it's unlimited. And so in the same sort of way, I've got a feeling, and once anything I can prove, describe, define, automatically means it's not that important.
James Morrison is our guest on Open House tonight. Now, is it called modal playing or modal?
Modal playing, yes.
We're
going to talk about modal playing.
Well, I remember the first time I actually saw you and your brother play, actually. I was visiting Melbourne. Must have been 97. I was just married.
Okay.
That's right. We're going through, and you were doing a concert
there.
Your
10th anniversary this year. Congratulations.
We are. We just did, yes.
Oh, you did? Oh,
yeah, exactly. And you were playing at the Meyer Music Bowl.
Right.
And it was a great concert. It was fantastic. You remember that one, don't you?
Absolutely.
Beautiful day.
You were in the, about the fourth row,
weren't
you?
You waved back.
Yeah, 36th in from the left.
And you called the guards and said, take him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's when you were talking about, and I know you've said it numerous times, this ability to both blow and breathe at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Is it different?
That's not modal playing, it's something else. You mean circular breathing.
That's what I mean.
Okay. Yes.
Give us an example of
that.
This
is how you play a didgeridoo, of course.
That is fascinating. How, can anybody do that, or any certain
Absolutely.
People? You can.
Oh, anyone could. Well, anyone because could learn to do it, I mean.
When I breathe in, I can't blow out at the same time.
Can't you really?
No.
Heavens, we can fix that. No, you breathe in your nose and out your mouth at the same time. The way to learn this is quite simple. Grab a straw and a glass of water and blow some bubbles just gently. Cause what you need is something with a little bit of back pressure, like a straw in water, but not too much, and you can see the airflow. And then you just start blowing gently. And then while you're blowing, try and take a breath through your nose. And you'll find you'll automatically... This is a much better way than actually telling you what to do with the valve in your throat and everything. Just try it. And you'll find you'll snatch a breath. And the first time you do it, maybe the bubbles stop. But if you go, no, concentrate on just keeping the bubbles going. Look at them and snatch a breath through your nose just quickly like that. And you'll find you'll do it and the bubbles won't stop with your circular breathing. Now, to take that to the level where you can do it playing a trumpet, which requires a lot more air, is harder. But the technique is there right away. Of course, be careful doing this, because if you do it backwards, you'll drown.
Yeah.
Don't breathe in through your mouth and out your nose.
He's full of jokes tonight, isn't he? That's what comes from being a preacher's kid.
Exactly. But no, and it's very handy, not just for playing the trumpet or any other wind instrument, but blowing up balloons at kids' parties. Saves a lot of time not to have to stop to take a breath.
So you can keep a note going literally for hours.
Well, until your lips or whatever, you know, can't vibrate. Something else would run out. I've never found out, because I've never wanted to listen to it for that long. No. Neither does anyone else.
Well, give us an example. Come on, give us a little bit of an example.
Look, there's not going to be much of an example here, because I'll do it. But, I mean, what the listeners will hear is just a note going on and on and on. They won't see what's going on. But trust me, I have no sort of apparatus connected to the trumpet. This is just me. Sounds like they've got the test pattern or something, doesn't it? The test tone. That can go on for a very long time.
How long did it take you to master that?
It just happened one night. The same way as I've described with the glass of water and a straw, I was playing a passage, running out of breath, and I couldn't let go of the note. It was just all wrong to stop the note. And so I kept playing. I just thought, I'll grab a quick breath. I wasn't even really thinking clearly. I mean, how can you without the note stopping? And I snatched a breath through and I said, that's better. And afterwards I went, wait a minute, the note didn't stop. And I did it again. I went, this is good. I don't have to stop for breaths anymore. And so it just happened.
Yeah.
We're covering a lot of things.
We are covering a lot of things tonight. Mm. Yeah, it's really quite educational as well as inspirational. Thank you very much for that. Totally forgotten the next question I was going to ask you.
If you're listening right now and you're wondering what's going on, he's completely lost it and knows not what to ask me next.
I have this great question for
While
you.
While he's looking for the question, I'll just play some... No rush.
Thank you.
Hurry up music.
No, that's what. Keep on going.
That's what. No, you should have done it by now. Have you worked out the next question?
My question was: would you like to take us out with one last song from the Gospel Collections album?
From the Gospel Collection. I'll tell you what. I'll play a bit of a song. Let me think. What have you got? Something in mind? Have you got the album there handy? Well, do you believe I made the album and chose the songs, and I can't tell you what's on it?
Well, Nobody Knows the Trouble I've Seen is quite a nice one.
Yes. Why don't I play a bit of it live here in the studio, just solo trumpet, which of course is missing all the drums and bass and guitar and vocals, and then you could even morph into, with magic, the magic of the studio, into a bit of the actual track then.
Let's see if we can do that.
Okay.
Beautiful stuff, and every window in the studio has got a crack in it now. Thanks very much. James Morrison's been wonderful to have you on Open House tonight.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks so much for joining us. JamesMorrison.com.au will get you details of all the albums, including those Gospel Collection albums 1 and 2 that's out now. It's been good fun, hey?
We hope you enjoyed this FM 103.2 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit fm1032.com.au.